Hey, Chris Manning here from Lock on Cavs, your daily-ish Cleveland Cavaliers podcast. Coming up on today's show, Evan and I are going into the book club for the next three chapters of Return of the King. We're getting into the 2016 finals, folks. It's really getting into the deep, fun stuff here in this book. Just a little update on where we're at right now, according to Adrian Wojnarowski, who was... Evan, are you still blocked?
Yeah, I'm still blocked, actually. I don't know if you saw, I checked. Tweeted it like, oh, about the fun fact. Chris makes fun of the fact that I never sleep. It was about
what?
That's not
accurate, but okay.
About quarter to six or so, I was just sitting there and I just like tweeted at him, hey, you up? And I checked. I'm still blocked. So go ahead and gloat that you can read ESPN mouthpiece Adrian Wojnarowski. I'm just going to double down on this now. Fuck them.
It's just a bit, just the whole bit now. But according to him, the latest out there right now is that the NBA Board of Governors, who kind of makes all these decisions, and that does obviously include the Cavs and whomever their representative would be, could be one of three people. There is not going to be a hard vote on what is going to the NBA return is going to look like, so that these talks are going to continue. So we don't exactly have final clarity yet on the Cavs. Again, that could come this weekend. I think we all sort of know where this is trending, but you know, it we don't know for sure yet. And once we know, Evan and I will surely break that down and what it means and what it doesn't. He wrote about that at Forbes. I'll be doing a similar piece at Fear the Sword, but. Rest be assured, we have a lot of stuff planned, so a very couple fun theme weeks and kind of bigger projects planned over these next couple months to keep you informed on the Cavs as things go on, so look out for that. But that's where we are right now with the NBA possible return, and we'll kind of see what that ultimately looks like. But today, again, book club, and that's coming up today on Locked On Cavs, your daily-ish Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. And as always, we're brought to you by Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar ever.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
Cleveland! This is for you!
Evan, all right, you already appeared. We don't need to say how you're doing. I know you're a little tired.
No, I'm not tired. Dude, I'm good to go. I got pep in my
step. I did tell you before we started recording that you were like a little more energetic, a little more vibrant as we got in here. And that's, you know, that's product of a good meal.
That doesn't sound like I'm recording in a microphone that I wrapped in tinfoil and dipped in chocolate milk. So everything is sounding better. Hopefully everyone can hear
Did
me
Did someone
okay.
tell you that?
No. Chris, this is going to make me sound like a narcissist, but I go back and listen to our episodes to see how the quality sounds, and I like make sure like I don't... do the yeah, no's, and and have way too long of pauses, and I'm
respectful. No, you're just studying game tape. I do the same thing.
Okay. Just reviewing, and I'm like, wow, my quality was doo-doo feces, as the late, great Michael Jackson would say.
Well, maybe not so great.
You said last night it was all right, but let's...
No. You were called in last night. You had a long, normal hour working. If you don't want Evan to have to, like, call in from his office... listen to the podcast like 900 times and buy a bunch of Built Bars.
There you go.
Right? Go just get jacked on Built Bars.
In the words of Chase Down Terrorist Justin Rowan, cook those books, folks.
Yeah, cook the books. Let's go. But, Evan, let's get into chapter 15 here. This is continuing into the Ty Lue era of the title run. This is kind of like where I think, Evan, this to me is where we first start feeling his imprint. Obviously the stuff in the finals is going to go down as more meaningful because of the stage, but him being able to kind of call out the team, call out Kevin in particular while they're in New York at a hotel owned by someone that I personally do not like and will not say his name, is really meaningful for him as a coach. And I think when you compare, I think when you just compare it to David Blatt in particular in this, but also John Beilein, just a coach in the NBA being able to have the respect of his players and call guys out like Kevin Love and LeBron and Kyrie is just so meaningful and so valuable. And I cannot, I think when I think about one of the biggest lessons I've learned from rereading this book and thinking about this era, that is one of the biggest lessons for me, is that you need a coach who actually has the respect of his players more. That is just an almost essential thing.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And to be fair, Blatt did call out Kevin. He really called out Kyrie. I remember early into the season when Kyrie had that zero assist game, and every talking head on national media was acting like the sky was falling in Cleveland because Kyrie had zero assists, and David Blatt made a point to that it was Kyrie's job to get Kevin and LeBron involved in the offense, blah, blah, blah. This is before LeBron seized the reins and made Kyrie become the secondary ball handler and creator, but that's just going on a tangent here. But Ty also would call out Kyrie and Kevin, but the big thing is he called out LeBron, and I think, like you said, since he's a former player, Phil Jackson disciple, was successful playing with Kobe Bryant, coached under Doc Rivers, overall just a successful coach everywhere he went in every venture of his career, and player as well, just maybe not like a superstar, obviously not a superstar, but a successful player career-wise, commanded the respect of that locker room. But the biggest thing is he held the best player accountable, and I think that gives you a lot of clout and a lot of like level of comfort and familiarity with the rest of the roster. And like you said, a lot of the same thing happened with Beeline. It feels like Beeline kind of mentally checked out in holding certain players accountable. Kevin kind of got away with his own BS for the longest time when Beeline was coaching, and then when JB came in, he already had the respect factor of a lot of his players, and it just trickles down to the rest of the roster, and the same thing says to Ty. And Chris, I'll say this again. Health-wise, it was for the best that Ty stepped away last year from coaching the Cavs. He was terminated from his position, and there's a lot of other stuff that went on to that decision as well. But for his health, that was the best thing, but he still would have been the best guy to be coaching the Cavs right now, because I feel like the mess and debacle that was John Beilein's for 54 games in Cleveland would have never been in my mind at all, because Ty would have been able to kind of right the ship and get things running functionally normally like he did the first time around, when he had some of the biggest egos that you ever have to manage in a locker room with that 2016 Cavs squad.
Yeah, and I also want to just emphasize on kind of what you're saying here. I think the LeBron stuff obviously matters the most, but I'll just say I don't think like it has the Blatt calling him out does not have the resonance that that the Lou does. I also think, I don't know, I'm going to check my notes here and say, I think it's in this chapter, but we also get the shades of him doing so much and stretching himself to a certain degree, because he takes the defense back from Mike Longobardi.
Mm-hmm.
And the foundation of him having to do so much is just so apparently there. And I mean, again, like he's thrown into this. He's already was doing the defense. He seeds that when he takes over, but the defense slips. And I've forgotten that they were like the sixth best defense in the league. It's crazy how much he was really seemingly shouldering as coach, and that obviously took a very good toll on him. Especially as we learn later, his habits were not particularly good.
No,
and that ultimately will burn him out later on. But yeah, I think that the early seeds of that are kind of probably planted here.
Yeah, they really are, if you think about it, because for all intents and purposes, Mike Longobardi had one of the easiest jobs in America, where he kind of fumbled the Cavs defense, because the Cavs were not a good regular season defensive team after this 2016 title run and for the remainder of LeBron's time and eventually Ty's time in Cleveland. And no, because Ty would always seize control of the defense come playoff time, and the Cavs looked like such a legitimately good defensive and offensive squad. Granted, if you have that much firepower, it kind of works out that way. But defensively, the Cavs were so locked in and tuned in. A lot of it has to do with credit for the fact that Ty was really good, and he's a meticulous tactician and game planner, and just figuring out the right rotations and situations set up the Cavs for success. But yeah, no, that's a really good point. I guess I really thought about this was our first indicator that Ty stretches himself way too thin, and you amplify the fact that you're coaching a LeBron James-led team, so there's added pressure to make the NBA Finals and be in contention for a title every single year. Like, that'll get to you for a while. And I still remember when LeBron's last season here, Brian Windhorst published a piece that shared that everybody in the Cavs organization just looked mentally, physically, and emotionally exhausted, and then LeBron walking in the building fresh like a rose. And like, it wasn't getting to LeBron, but it was definitely getting to everybody else, and Ty was no exception to that. He looked worn out by that last LeBron year, and then you could really tell like he was teetering on being just completely checked out by the time that first post-LeBron year.
Two things I'll just note here as little side notes on this chapter. Number one, again, this is just reinforced. This chapter reinforces that the Cavs are not winning the title if they don't get Channing Frye. I will believe that till the day I die.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, I forgot how heavy the Kyrie Kehlani stuff really got, and how weird those and problematic those days were. Those days were on Twitter.
Yeah, that was weird. That was a weird time. I'm not really going to talk too much about that. It's kind of like Forrest Gump. I don't got too much to say about... He didn't have much to say about Vietnam. I don't have much to say about Kehlani and Kyrie. It was just a mess overall. And but no, Channing was huge for the Cavs winning this championship, not just because of his on-the-court contributions, because he did have big playoff moments for the Cavs. I mean, he was practically useless against Golden State just because of his defensive liabilities he presented, but he and RJ were just huge in, one, getting Kevin to come out of his shell and finally be a part of this team and fit in instead of fitting out, and just, you know, just simple stuff like that. Where I remember Channing's op-ed with the Players Tribune, where he shared that, like, why aren't we having fun? Like, that's the biggest thing. Like, he came in, he's just a huge goofball, and he likes to have fun and likes to have a good time. And I think, you know, losing his parents and, you know, facing death himself with his heart disease really put things into perspective that every day is a blessing and you need to make the most of it. And being in a situation like Cleveland's, it just kind of put everything else in perspective for a lot of the other players too. And that's critical. Like, good chemistry that Channing brought was also a huge factor in the Cavs winning this championship.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Again, I just cannot imagine that, like, the levity he brings in, the kind of connectivity he brings in.
Yeah, we had, like, minimal interactions with him in the locker room. I remember his last game as an NBA player, he was having the time of his life just walking around killing a six-pack of, I think, Bell's Too Hard, and he was just having, like, a casual conversation with any member of the media that wanted to shoot the shit with him. He's just a guy who lights up the room for all the right reasons.
No, absolutely, and lights up the Atlanta Hawks on three, which we'll get to. But, Evan, hell, you know, yeah, what's another way to guarantee you can light up the room? Built Bars.
Heck yeah.
How do you like that segue? Built Bars are tasty. These are a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. They come in 16 amazing flavors, 8 that have chocolate, 8 that have nuts, 8 chocolate with that are nut-free. They're covered 100% in chocolate, soft and easy to chew, and they're great for the health-conscious guy. They help you lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. They're low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. Flavors like peanut butter brownie, for example, have 20 grams of protein, only 170 calories, 3 grams of sugar, 3 grams of net carbs.
Mm-hmm.
Can't recommend these enough, and I know you feel the same.
Oh, no, I'm a big, big fan. I've been branching out a little bit. I know I've been preaching for the mint brownie for a while, and trust me, great flavor, Built Bar, but I've been, you know, dabbling a little bit with the coconut almond, and Chris, it tastes like a Mound Bar. Could you believe it? It's a healthy Mound Bar, which makes it even crazier and an even better treat for me, because I don't have to worry about packing pounds, and I'm getting gains while working out and not having to worry about rationing carbs or doing other things that make me, like, sound like a sad late 20-year-old at this point in my life. It just, Built Bar's delicious, and it's a game changer, and at this point, folks, you're letting yourself down by not having a Built Bar and just rewarding yourself with a sweet, delicious treat. And you don't have to put on that COVID-15 either, because you will not if you eat Built Bars.
Yeah, and right now you can go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON. You get $10 off your first order. Again, promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off your first order at BuiltBar.com. There's a bunch of new flavors coming out. Cookie dough is back as well. So again, check these out. Try peanut butter brownie, try the chocolate, coconut. There's so many great flavors. Go try them now. BuiltBar.com, promo code LOCKEDON. We're going to take a quick break, come back, talk about Chapter 16 in Return of the King. That's coming up next on LOCKEDON Cast. All right, we are back here. Evan, I'm just going to say, LOL Stanley Johnson, LOL Stan Van Gundy, LOL the Detroit Pistons. My guys, what are you doing?
What a weird series. I think when I was reading this, I texted you, and I'm like, I forgot how bizarre and, like, how badly the Pistons, like, wanted to turn this into a beef, and the Cavs just acted like they were shit that they stepped in and just wiped it off and kept moving. Like, that's all it was.
The Cavs could not care
less.
about the Detroit Pistons.
And I mean, it's just kind of the reality of the Detroit Pistons situation to begin with. Shout out to Little Caesars Arena being a mausoleum, even with Blake Griffin and soon-to-be Cavalier Andre Drummond on the roster. That's the thing. Andre Drummond had some legitimate beef with the Cavs during this series, too. And you kind of forgot about that, especially after he came to Cleveland this year at the trade deadline.
Yeah, Drummond hits LeBron in the head in the series. Sam Van Gundy is just openly just, like, outraged. And I want to say this. Him basically, like, saying without saying it, that Ty Lue, like, wasn't a good coach, kind of, is so weird. And I'm just saying, like, A, not true. And two, like,
that's so weird to think, especially when you think about Stan's brother Jeff being such a coach's advocate, like, how different they are in that, because, like, Jeff would never criticize Ty's acumen as a coach, but apparently it's not a family thing, it's just an individual thing.
Yes, and I'll say, like, when I think about the adjustment that he, like, took umbrage with, basically, as being, like, an adjustment, was, like, playing LeBron with the bench unit, which was basically just, like, ripping up something the Cavs had done the whole regular season the year before about keeping him with Kevin and Kyrie playing with the bench unit. I just want to say, like, playing LeBron with the bench unit, I think, in retrospect, is one of those really obvious things. I don't have enough, like, detailed memory of the Miami Heat teams he played on to kind of say if, like, Spo was doing that or whatever. Mm-hmm. But when I think about what really works with LeBron, and you think about, I think, one of the reasons you could, one of the big check marks in his box about, like, what makes him an all-time great player, it's that he makes other guys better. It's just a part of his game. It's an integral part of his DNA. And when he's boosting these bench lineups in the playoffs, I'm going to pull up some of the data here as we flip it back to you, but I just, like, can't it is absurd to me that, you know, when you think about that and just kind of brushing that off, I'm just sorry, like, that's just, like, a really weird thing. Like, everything about the Pistons in the series is just stupidly weird.
Yeah, it is. And I think we should finally touch base on just, like, Stanley Johnson, you know, really going out of his way to try and be a pest, and just absolutely remarkable. And first off, again, on Stan, it feels like karma's a bit of a bitch here, because Stan and the Magic ruined the Cavs' chances of having a Kobe-LeBron finals by cheating, so it is what it is, you know, tough break. But it's just, it is absolutely weird, again, credit to Ty Lue's ability and the Cavs coaching staff's ability to prepare and lock in on an opponent and, you know, just attack and find flaws and deficiencies in their opponent just to make them look absolutely foolish against such a loaded team offensively. And LeBron playing with the bench unit was just another feature of that. And, like you said, I don't know if Spo did that while LeBron was at the Heat, but it makes a lot of sense to, you know, I feel like that's a Miami Heat philosophy where Spoelstra would always stagger either LeBron, Wade, or Bosch so that one of them was always on the floor with either the bench players or together. So I feel like it's just a smart, fundamental tactic to do. And yeah, you know, credit where credit's due to Ty. That was just a smart thing to do, and it worked. So
this playoffs. Okay, so here's the bench lineup. It only plays 77 minutes per Basketball Reference in this playoff run. That's not a ton, but when you're contracting your bench and you're not playing as many guys, that kind of evens out, and you have short series, whatever. Here's the five-man all-bench lineup. Delly, Chump, Jefferson, LeBron, Channing Frye. Evan, give me your guess on how many points per 100 possessions that line about scored opponents by that playoffs.
15.
38.2 per 100 possessions.
I didn't give the Cavs enough credit and didn't think less of the Pistons. I was trying to be nice, so yes. That's just pathetic, man.
Yeah, and then if you go Kyrie, JR, Tristan, James, Jefferson, so you just kind of have the smaller lineup, that lineup is 27 plus 27.5 in 71 minutes. And then that classic season starting five, so Kyrie, LeBron, Kevin Love, JR, Tristan, it's plus 18.9. Like, these Cavs lineups with LeBron are just, like, freaking outrageous this playoffs. And again, like, I just think Ty knowing to make that switch and being able to, like, do that, and I'm sure, like, that there's something with Kyrie who I also want to know more about his like rehab at this time. It's something that doesn't get really talked about much in the book, and I think it'd be, he'll never open up about it because that's not who he is, but I would love to know more about how he was getting in this, described as like primal shape for the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I would think there's probably something in Ty where he has to communicate to Kyrie that like, hey, like, I'm taking this away from you and it's going to help the team and it's not going to be, you know, give you less time to shine on your own, but this is going to help us win. I'm sure there's some communication with Ty that has to be done there as well. I would just assume.
I would assume so too. And I think the fact that Ty has that credibility and ability to connect with his players in the locker room, Kyrie especially, who is not the easiest to work with, for those of you who don't maybe not follow Kyrie Irving's career arc closely. So I think that's just the thing, getting Kyrie to buy in on that and just getting it to work. And just another thing that's like testament to Ty Lue's ability as a coach is he's able to get players to buy in and just kind of see the bigger picture and what's really more important down the line instead of just individual stats is the fact that you can hoist a Larry O'Brien trophy at the end of this, and that's really more what matters more than anything. And also just another thing, shout out to Griff for putting together all these pieces that are, you know, tailor-made to play alongside LeBron, because Channing Frye was kind of his white whale for the longest time, and when he was able to get him, like, that's just a player that fits really well alongside LeBron. I mean, Kevin as well, but those two alongside LeBron, like, it's a proven formula. And why I was so incensed at the Lakers last year is you put shooters around LeBron, you let him operate as the primary initiator in the offense, and you're golden. And that's kind of what Griff did with the Cavs, and that's what they were doing against the Pistons by playing them off the floor in just every single game.
Yeah, all right, we're going to take one more break, come back, talk about Chapter 17, the last chapter in this week's edition of the Book Club, coming up next on Locked On Cavs. All right, we're back. Evan, let's just start real quickly. Do you remember where you were when you found out about Muhammad Ali?
I really don't. I think I was at work. I had to think about that. I'll let you talk about it. I really have to like sit back and think where I was when I found out about him.
Yeah, so I'll just say this. Ali is someone I'm inherently fascinated by. He is one of, if not the most interesting, the top three most interesting athletes I think that has ever existed. There's a couple of really good books about him. There's one by Jonathan Eich that I came out like 2 years ago that is just like unbelievable, that I really could recommend. But I know I remember where I was just because it was kind of weird. I remember being in the Nashville airport. I was en route to going to Norway at this time. I had this stupid flight path. It was Cleveland to Nashville to LaGuardia. Had to wait 8 hours, so I went to my uncle, lived there with my dad, and then we switched to JFK, flew to Oslo. Very weird, stupid path. But thinking about this and thinking about Ali, I was sitting in the airport and I was doing a post about it because LeBron immediately commented on it and tweeted about it. And I might have the date exactly wrong, but I just remember this being like on my mind as the final started. It obviously goes away, and we kind of don't think about it as much, but that meant a lot to LeBron. This chapter makes it very clear how much Ali influenced LeBron in a lot of ways. And that is very notable, I think, when you think about what LeBron is as a man and more than and as sort of a public figure in ways that differentiates him from some of the other all-time greats.
No, for sure. I'm still trying to think. Yeah, I think I was just working at the time, and I remember seeing what LeBron said. And yeah, this book and this chapter specifically really does put it in perspective how much the passing of Muhammad Ali had an impact on LeBron. Like you said, Muhammad Ali was an athlete that LeBron, and not just athlete, just an ambassador to the African-American community that LeBron legitimately looked up to. And I bet you winning this championship in 2016 made it even more special for LeBron, because he was able to, you know, LeBron is a guy who likes to play in memory of people. For sure, like, he likes to have other people on his mind and his heart, his kids especially, his wife and his mom, and I'm sure everybody else and his kids at his school and everything too, but Ali as well, where it's just LeBron respects and recognizes greatness, and Ali was one of those. And I think it was just another motivating factor for him to just make the impossible possible, especially with, you know, this matchup with Golden State just kind of feeling predestined at this point.
Yeah, that's about right. Okay, so other things in this chapter, Phil Handy, just the man. Love Phil Handy.
Such an underrated coach. He's gonna do very well if he ever ends up as a head coach somewhere.
Yeah, I just want to say, what a run for him. Cavs, then he wins a title with the Raptors, and he's coaching with the Lakers this year.
He has a Steve Kerr / Robert Horry career path. Wherever he coaches, he's in line to win a championship. And hey, he could be an option in Brooklyn as well if Ty ends up taking the coaching job there. Like, I think he could do some really special things there and just another ring on his resume.
Yes. I want to just say that the students from Harvard are stupid for spending time writing that paper.
Oh, yeah. No. Just get your math out of my... It's like the Houston Rockets when they audited the Western Conference.
You almost
finals.
Went full Southern accent there, and I don't know if you meant to do that or if like I misheard you, but it just sounded like you're about to get your math out of my spurts, and I was just I can't handle that.
No, it's okay. At least I didn't say like shut up and dribble or something. That would have been really problematic. No, it's just that paper was super stupid and whatever, man. I could get really hung up on a lot of this stupid stuff, but like reading this book and now knowing like what the end result is and what the prize is at the end of all this, like at the time I was really annoyed by that, what those Harvard students put together, but then the Cavs won the championship in 2016. I'm like, you know what? They can say whatever they want, but they look like fucking idiots, and they look like I said, like when the Houston Rockets launched an audit on the Western Conference Finals, like you just look like a bunch of nerds and you're going to get bullied when you're proven wrong. And it kind of feels like that's the case.
Yes.
And I'm talking to a guy here who's like a big analytics guy. So this is just like me screaming into the void right now.
Well, I am. It's funny because I think I've like, for me, I still really, I love data. Like I love new with data, but there are just certain things you can't calculate.
Yeah.
I believe that. And the Kyrie stuff was always just really stupid to me. It just didn't pass.
I don't
want to
give
like,
Skip Bayless too much credence, but there is, like, you can't, like, he calls it the quote-unquote clutch gene or whatever, but, like, you really can't, like, calculate heart or just a player just be money or, like, you know, the brightest stars shine brightest on the biggest stage, kind of like cliches like that, and Kyrie is definitely one of those players, so.
Kyrie's also just was much better than Delly. Delly would tell you that.
Yeah, I mean, Delly was a pest in practice, and love Delly to pieces, but there's a reason why Kyrie is considered arguably the best point guard in franchise history, and Delly isn't, so.
Yes, and then lastly, the big thing of this chapter that just starts coming up, the Warriors' hubris is just crackling before this series, with the better-than-the-Showtime Lakers talk, the 90s Bulls talk, you know, some of the stuff gets downplayed by them, whatever, but man, the hubris is popping as the series kicks off. And obviously, you know, there's the Steph injury, this playoffs, all that stuff. Had to go through just that one bit of adversity for the first time, and didn't work out for them, but man, oh man, the hubris is popping as the series starts.
No, yeah, and 73-9 don't mean no thing if you don't win a ring, so... That Warriors team is like the Peyton Manning Indianapolis Colts is always my comparison. Awesome regular season team, but they didn't win anything. Like Peyton did win once in Indy and he won once in Denver, but like there's a reason why I'd rather have LeBron James and Tom Brady than I would Steph Curry or Peyton Manning in the clutch situation. Just my two cents there, folks.
Do you remember how you react to some of the Warrior stuff at that time?
Oh, I was so sick of it. I hate like, I cover this team, and the Cavs frustrate me to no end, but I had legitimate, like, vitriol and hatred towards the Warriors, like, every single thing, like, I was against every step of the way, and just, like, the showboating and the cockiness, and, like, yeah, the championship swagger is definitely a thing, but, credit where credit's due to the Cavs. They, weathered the storm, and granted, when they went down 3-1, I'm like, alright, well, this is over, this is gonna suck, because... I could just remember Draymond going off about how the Cavs suck in the championship parade. I'm like, great, I get to hear more of that again. And I was more of a fan at this time. I was just thinking, like, Draymond Green's going to win finals MVP. And this is already a cocky player who does not need any more ammo to show off how prideful and boastful he is. But if he had a finals MVP and he was able to knock out LeBron the second year in a row, like, I would have been just so annoyed. And there's an alternate timeline out there where the Warriors did end up winning this series, and thankfully we're not in. But I was completely just anti-Warriors all the through and through. Like, did not hide my fan colors at all in this series.
When I think about this, the crackling of that and just it happening before they'd won the second title and like kind of fully completed their arc is just like amazing. Like, I fully would have understood you going in all in this and playing into it. Like, if you win two titles and you beat LeBron 2 years in a row, whatever, doing it before that is just like, you just gotta wait a little bit. And I love when athletes are honest. Like, I don't ever, like, one of my big things with quarantine is that, like, every time an athlete like Damian Lillard or Mike Clevenger, like, I just want you to be honest about how you're feeling about stuff. We will not, like, hunt you down, or, like, the rational ones of us are not going to, like, dunk on you and be super annoying just because, like, you're honest.
We won't call you privileged, Damian. That's what we're trying to say.
So I'm not saying I don't appreciate the Warriors just coming out and being themselves in that regard, but, like, it's pretty funny.
Oh, yeah, no, it's just, I think it's the sour taste of how 2015 ended and the fact that the Cavs just kind of went through so much BS, in the regular season with Blatt being terminated and Ty being promoted to this position, and, like, people doubting Ty coming in as head coach of the Cavs and, you know, saying, like, oh, well, the Cavs just kind of are a joke and they're letting LeBron run the team, and, like, Golden State is historically they are one of the greatest teams ever, but, like I said, didn't win a championship, doesn't faze me that much. And also, I think, like, I look back and I remember I was, like, full on, like, I hate Golden State, but after 2016, like, it just kind of feels like a fart in the breeze where I'm like, I'm good. The Cavs won one ring, and that's all that matters.
The last thing for me here is I love that, the little note at the end of the chapter about how Kevin gets to put the puzzle piece in is just great, because obviously they win this really important game 3. Key doesn't play because of the concussion. Can't imagine that ever will feel right for him. Love that he got to put the puzzle piece in, and that, like, mm-hmm. amid these three chapters, one of the themes is that Kevin Love really is kind of fitting in and not fitting out amid all of this.
Oh, no, for sure. And that was a big thing for Kevin, and part of why he came back, because he was a free agent the summer leading into the season. The part of the reason he came back is he wanted to be able to taste playing in the NBA Finals, and he did, and he had a concussion, but, like, I think it's just more so it speaks a lot to, again, this is how Ty coaches, where he doesn't let any of his players feel like he's down on any of them. Like, he won't give up on them. And Kevin was one of those players where if you give up on him, he can mentally check out super fast. And I think the symbolic gesture of him putting that puzzle piece in was just a big thing to keep him engaged, even if he was going to be used as a decoy and maybe not have, like, the most flattering stat lines for the remainder of this series. But, you know, you make these sacrifices for the greater good, and that's one of Ty's biggest tactics, and it really rung true with this Cavs team.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. Well, we're going to wrap it up there. Thanks again, everyone, for listening. Have a great weekend. Again, go check out Built Bar. Use the promo code LOCKEDON and get your Built Bars, get those high-quality chocolate-covered protein snacks in your life right now, and we'll be back on Monday. Again, we have some more stuff coming. We have some series coming up, but we'll kind of hopefully get some more clarity on stuff with the Cavs. Perhaps we'll cross over next. We have another Time Machine Week coming up. Perhaps we'll cross over with other teams, other hosts that are covering teams, per se, in regards to teams heading into the very long offseason. But that's going to be it. Evan, any big plans this weekend?
I'm gonna take it easy, avoid the heat. For those of you listening who follow my work, I have something fun coming out on Forbes Friday morning, or probably around the time this episode drops, so check it out when you can. And Chris and I have some fun stuff cooking at Fear the Sword, and I'll be working on that a little bit this weekend as well, and kind of looking forward to getting that out there too. It's somebody I really look up to in the NBA Twitter community is working with us on it, and it's going to be a fun project by the time it's done, I think.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Well, thanks again, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you after the weekend. Enjoy, and stay safe out there, and we'll again talk to you Monday. Thanks for listening. Thank you.